Hello, welcome to Midweek Mom Talk on 360 Talk Radio for Women. I'm Dr. Jackie, the owner of Motion Spot LLC, and on today's episode, I want to start by spending some time in the pediatrics world. If you follow us on Instagram at Motion Spot Pediatrics, you'll see our latest post was about cause and effect toys. Now, cause and effect toys are those that you push or pull or do something yourself that then creates a reaction in the toy, right? So that sounds kind of vague, and a lot of toys do have this where you might push a button and then a song plays, or you pull a handle and something pops up, right? Probably the most common cause and effect toy is like a Jack in the Box. You turn that lever, turn it, and the Jack pops out of the box. That's a cause and effect toy. In today's world, probably a more common toy that we see is a, I'm not sure what the official name for it is, but it has like 4 or 5 different buttons, different levers. Some of them you spin, some of them you push or pull. One of them is kind of like a light switch. There are different shapes involved, right? So with each of those buttons, a different animal or shape pops up. So it's like a baby Jack in the Box type of toy, where instead of just one Jack in a box, there are like 4 or 5 little things in a box. So that's what our last post was about. It was one of those baby style Jack in the Box toys. And it really focused, that post focused a lot on how you can use this toy to help with speech. So you can label what's coming out of the box. You can label what the child is doing, push, pull, talk about shapes, talk about colors, right? But there's so much more that can be said about cause and effect play than what we were able to fit into that post. So that's why I want to spend some time to elaborate on that reel and just elaborate more on cause and effect play overall. So now that we know what cause and effect play is, let's talk about why it's important. So first of all, cause and effect during play, it teaches consequence to an action. It teaches children that if I do this, then that happens, right? And that's an important skill for life. That's also just an important piece of knowledge to have as you grow. So it's helping to teach consequences. And consequences doesn't always mean something negative. I know the word consequence has this negative connotation. I just mean, by when I say consequence, I just mean that it teaches a child that there is a result of their action. There is something that happens after they perform a certain action or after they perform a certain behavior, right? That's cause and effect. And kids really start learning that from infancy, when they're newborns, right? When they need something, they cry. That's a cause and effect situation. They have something that they want, so they cry in order to get mom or dad or grandma or whoever to come over and give that to them. So they learn, when I do this, then that happens. When I cry, then the bottle comes to me. Someone brings me the bottle, right? So that's cause and effect. And as a child grows, they're going to learn that cause and effect through play. And we know that play is really a child's most important way of learning. That's their main way to learn a lot of different things. They learn about their own skills, things that they're able to do, things that they maybe have some trouble doing and need more practice with. They also practice the different things they see us doing. They practice that through play, through imitative play. They practice socializing. They practice language. They practice a lot of different things while they're playing. That's the main way that kids learn, through play. And cause and effect is no different. They learn about cause and effect through this play. right? So they're creating a skill, they're learning this life lesson of cause and effect. What else is great about these pediatric or children's jack-in-the-box type toys? You can see in the reel on Instagram about the different language components, like I just mentioned, but there are also a lot of fine motor components as well. A lot of the more, I guess, common or modern day children's options, they are kind of a two-in-one where it's like this busy board along with the jack that comes out of the box to do the cause and effect. A busy board, if you've never heard or haven't seen, it's basically a board that has a bunch of different fine motor, not games so much, but pieces or gadgets. So a fine motor busy board, some examples would be different hooks that come on and off. Sometimes there are gears that you spin. When you spin one, then the second one spins, and the third. There might be a switch, like an up and down switch, in opening and closing little door or lever. A lot of different, like, things that you might find on a doorknob or on a door in general, like the lock that you can turn left or turn right, and a bunch of different types of fasteners to open and close. Just a lot of different styles, right? And these are also cause and effect. When I move my hand a certain way, when I move my fingers a certain way, then I'm able to complete the task, right? So that's a busy board, just in a quick little nutshell there. And these jack-in-the-box toys have that little busy board style as the cause that creates effect, that creates the jack to come out. So there's usually like a simple push option. Then there is a left and right switch where you push down on one side and that makes the jack come up. Now you see that the other side is now lifted or raised, so then the next time you play, you have to push the other side down. Sometimes there is a twist component, like a key that you would twist inside of a knob. So you have to practice different grasps with that. You can do a pincer grasp, which is your pointer finger and your thumb together, or you could do a tripod, or what we call a three-jaw chuck, which is your pointer and middle finger with the thumb. That's another way that you can twist it. Or you can do a lateral grasp, which is your thumb on kind of the side of your index finger. And next time you use a key, you can try to see how are you opening and closing your door, how are you holding your key, which grasp do you use. So those are three options. There are usually four or maybe five on these busy board jack-in-the-box toys, but I think you're getting the idea, right? So there are a bunch of different options. There are a lot of different methods that the child needs to use in order to make the jack open. So that's what I love about these style jack-in-the-box toys. It's not just you push the one button, the one circle, and something pops up, right? Each one has something different. So each jack, you're working on a different skill. You're working on a different fine motor pattern, and I think that's really great. Plus, most of them, I actually haven't seen any that aren't, but most of these are low tech. So there is no additional component of lights or sounds that are keeping a child, quote unquote, entertained, right? It's purely based on their behavior, on their cause and effect. A lot of high tech toys can be considered some type of cause and effect where if you squeeze a hand, then a song plays, or you push a button and the heart lights up, right? Something like that. That is cause and effect as well. It just includes that component of a technology involved. Whereas these lower tech jack-in-the-boxes, again, it's purely the entertainment is purely based on the child's behavior and being proud of themselves for, pushing the button or pulling the lever or twisting the key and the excitement of the jack popping up. Something else I want to mention about these toys. I've talked a lot in the past about imaginative play and the importance of imaginative play for children, how imagination is really what helps kids get curious about their environment and explore, and that's really a pathway to learning. So open-ended toys like this jack-in-the-box toy we're talking about is not one that will naturally elicit imagination, and that's okay because it has other purposes, other benefits, like what we talked about. But if you're specifically looking for imagination, imaginative play, maybe your child needs kind of more practice with independent imaginative play, this is probably not the toy for them. But that being said, you can, if you're there with your child, or if you're a therapist, a pediatric therapist or specialist of some sort, you can elicit make-believe. You can elicit this imagination, right? So the toy I'm thinking of, one of the buttons that you push, I think it's an elephant that pops up. So you can create a story behind, you know, why that elephant is hiding, and then the elephant pops up to come play, right? You can create an imaginative scenario. So it's perhaps maybe not like a natural method of imaginative play, but you can always incorporate imagination in this play scenario. So that was the last reel that we shared on the Motion Spot Pediatrics page. If you check us out, you'll also see our last post, like static post, I guess you would call it, which shares the insurance companies that we do accept. We realized that a lot of people don't know whether or not we accept insurance. So if you are in the New Jersey area especially, we do accept a variety of commercial insurance plans and a couple of government-issued insurance companies, insurance programs. And if you are not in New Jersey, there might still be some insurance plans that we are able to work with. So just putting that out there, if you are interested or thinking about potentially getting occupational therapy or speech or physical therapy, if you are open to a virtual option, if that's something that's easier for you, whether it's for yourself or for your child or a loved one, just wanted to let you know that that is an option, especially for you moms out there. I know it can be very hard to leave the house for an appointment, really, especially if it's an appointment for you, right? We often feel guilt doing anything for ourselves. So if you are a mom who needs pelvic floor therapy, any kind of maternal health, or even if it's like fitness related, I do a lot of fitness and orthopedic training as an occupational therapist with my clients, my maternal health clients. So I think virtual is a really great option for a lot of my maternal health clients because they don't have to worry about leaving the house to have this appointment. They don't have to worry about getting ready or dropping the kids off somewhere. What if they bring their child with them, right? Instead, we can just schedule the session around their kiddo's nap time or around their school schedule, you know, just whatever it might be. So there is less of that worry of, okay, I have to leave the house and then it takes this long to get to the appointment and then this long to get home and it costs this much to get a sitter and then the sitter cancels or, you know, whatever else the stressors might be. So just something for you to keep in mind. And on our regular page, on our Motion Spot LLC page, our OT mom page, my last reel there was exactly about this, was about maternal health. So in that reel, I shared information about a topic that many people might not often want to think about, and that is peeing when you do various activities. There it is, I said it. Peeing. As in urinating. Yes, I know it sounds awkward, uncomfortable, a weird thing to be talking about, and for those reasons, many people do not talk about it. They do not talk about the problems that they might have, and some of these include having accidents when you are sneezing, or when you cough, when you laugh, when you jump, or when you run, when you dance too hard, right? These are the kinds of activities I'm talking about. My friend Kara actually called it the sneeze peas. So How can occupational therapy help? A lot of people don't know that it can. Many think, oh, well, I'm getting older, so that's just, you know, what it is, incontinence. Or, oh, well, I had a baby or multiple kids, so that's just, you know, something that comes along with motherhood. Others know that maybe something can be done for it, but they think that only a physical therapist can help, and that would be wrong. Yes, a PT can help, but an OT can too. It is actually very much in the scope of our practice. Toileting and sexual relations are two occupations in the practice framework that build occupational therapy, and they are two big functions of the pelvic floor. Plus, pelvic floor dysfunction can disrupt a lot of our other occupations. Socialization, leisure activities, work, and education, pretty much any and every daily life activity, any occupation. And so, an occupational therapist is very much able to assist you with this stress incontinence, or again, as my friend called it, your sneeze peas. Now, whenever I bring up this topic of stress incontinence, of course, I don't usually call it stress incontinence when I am opening it up to, you know, clients or posting on Instagram, because it's very, like, a scientific way. But when I say something like, you know, when you pee, when you sneeze, people always laugh. They kind of have this, like, awkward giggle, but it's a giggle of, oh, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Everyone nods their heads, right? Like, it's a very common reaction of, oh my gosh, I can't believe she just said that. She's talking about me. That's exactly what I am dealing with, exactly what I go through. And from there, after that, there's always excitement of, wait, someone can help me with this? That would be amazing. All I've ever heard before are people would, like, put an extra panty liner on before they leave the house, or like something like that, or like they're constantly going to the bathroom just in case, right? Stuff like that. And I'm here to tell you that there is help out there to actually decrease, if not fully stop, this stress incontinence altogether. So what is stress incontinence? Exactly as it sounds, incontinence meaning you go to the bathroom when you shouldn't, right? You're not able to hold your bowel or bladder. I personally, in my practice, focus more on the bladder aspect than clients who might have bowel incontinence, just saying. But anyway, so it's when you are essentially urinating non-voluntarily. You're not able to hold your bladder, and so you pee, and that's caused by stress that is putting pressure on your bladder. So like when you're pregnant, the pressure from the baby and everything else going on, right, that puts stress, a strain, a pressure on your bladder, and thus there is leakage. When you are coughing, you kind of have this second of like breath holding, right? Or when you sneeze, there's this second of like tight contraction of your abdominals and kind of like a breath holding maneuver, right? When you cough, you can even practice it now, right? Your core instantly kind of tightens and clenches, and that is putting this stress, that's putting pressure on your pelvic floor, on your bladder. Similarly, when you dance or jump or run, right, when you're doing these motions, they're adding this extra stress, this extra pressure that your bladder and your pelvic core muscles just aren't able to handle. They're not equipped to handle it. Oftentimes it might be from weakness, but it might also be from too much stress as well. But typically from what I am seeing with my clients, stress incontinence is more of a weakness, a pelvic floor weakness, a muscular weakness, as opposed to that tightness. My clients who have a tighter pelvic floor are the ones who actually have trouble urinating or completing a urination stream. But anyway, sidetrack there. So what can you do? There are for sure things that you can do. Look for an occupational or physical therapist, right, that can help you. But you can also start with what we call diaphragmatic breathing, doing breath work, right? I think some people, maybe like spiritual or holistic healers, when they say breath work, they mean more of like a mindful meditation type of breath work. When I'm saying breath work, and when more orthopedic practitioners say breath work, what we mean is actually practicing breathing. And in this case, it's a certain type of breathing that's for a musculoskeletal or physiologic purpose and benefit, as opposed to a psychosocial or mental health benefit, right? So when you're breathing in, your diaphragm should go out and down, right? When you breathe in, it fills up. So you should feel your ribs moving out. You should see your belly expanding. That's from your diaphragm moving down and out. And when your diaphragm is moving down and out, your pelvic floor also goes down. So a more scientific way of saying this is that when you are inhaling, right, when you're breathing in, when you're inhaling, your diaphragm lengthens, it gets longer, it gets bigger, you could think of, right? That's what I mean by it goes down and out. It lengthens, and as a result of your diaphragm lengthening, when you're inhaling, your pelvic floor muscles also lengthen. They also move in a downward direction in lengthening, right? So that's with breathing in, that's with inhaling. And now the opposite happens when you exhale. When you release that air, when you breathe out, your diaphragm kind of goes back up, right? It goes back to its shortened state, and your pelvic floor muscles also go back up. They go back up into their shortened state. So being able to practice breath work will actually help you to create an appropriate range of motion for your pelvic floor muscles, right? So let's say you had like shoulder pain, right? You had some pain in your shoulder because your shoulder muscle, your deltoid, was feeling stiff and sore, so you weren't able to lift your arm up all the way, right? Your range of motion was decreased. Your range of motion was impacted. You're not just going to leave that alone. You're going to take steps maybe to stretch it, to loosen it up, right? And you're going to practice, you're going to do exercises to increase your shoulder muscle range of motion. Your pelvic floor muscles also need to have proper range of motion, but the problem is that we don't see them. They are part of like the deeper core muscles, and because we don't see them, and because it's also a topic that's seen as, you know, maybe icky or taboo, right, embarrassing, people don't often work on them, even though having a disruption in pelvic floor muscular range of motion or strength or endurance, right, having pelvic floor disruption of any kind impacts, as I mentioned, so many areas of your life. So it really is just as important to make sure you're working properly on pelvic floor muscle range of motion as you would any other body part, any other muscle group. And this is another reason why an occupational therapist is able to help you with your pelvic floor dysfunction, whatever that might be, because while the situation is very specific and, you know, it's a specified body part, specified area of the body, the principles of healing are the same as they would be for any other body part, for any other area. So occupational therapists, when they graduate, right, they finished their schooling, they finished all of their rotations. When they're out practicing, any occupational therapist can choose to go into the field of orthopedics and more specifically pelvic health. And that's what I chose to do. And I went a step further with not just pelvic health, but specifically maternal health, maternal pelvic health. Okay, so breathing. How can you utilize breathing to help with your pelvic floor range of motion? So diaphragmatic breathing, some people might call this belly breathing or balloon breathing. I've heard it be called as well. So a good way to start is to put your hands right on the sides of your lower rib cage, so like right around your belly, and kind of putting your hands, like spreading your fingers out as if you're holding a beach ball or a balloon. And when you breathe in, you should visibly see your fingers moving out. And when you breathe out, you should see your fingers kind of falling back in. So on the inhale, you see your fingers moving up and out. And on the exhale, you see your fingers moving back in. So this is that diaphragmatic breath, how you know you are filling up with air as you breathe in, expanding your diaphragm and thus expanding your pelvic floor muscles. And then on your exhale, your diaphragm shortens, it goes back into its resting position, right, getting shorter, and your pelvic floor muscles should go back up as well. So this is the first way to use breathing, to use breath work for pelvic floor health, right? So in this way, we're increasing range of motion, which also helps with strength and conditioning. So let's do a few of these diaphragmatic breaths together. So again, if you can lie on your back, that's fine. If you're lying down, you can bend your knees, keep your feet flat on the floor, or you can sit up in a chair, however you're comfortable. Just get comfortable, make sure that you're able to put your hands on the sides of your belly there, again, towards the lower part of your ribs, kind of between your rib cage and your hip bones is where your hands can be. And on the inhale, you should feel your belly filling up. On the exhale, you should visibly see your hand going down and your belly going down. Breathing through your mouth or your nose is not the focus here. It's really, we're focusing on filling up your diaphragm. So whatever you are comfortable with, whether it's your mouth or your nose, I tend to breathe in through my nose and out. I'll make an kind of an O shape through with my lips and make the breath come out through my mouth typically. So that's step one. So let's do a few of those. Let's do about three. Yeah, let's do three of those. Ready? So hands on your sides, and here we go in. One more time in. And last time in. So something else about these breaths and what I see often with my clients when they're doing it for the first time, they will often raise their chests, raise their shoulders, right, to try to fill in a full breath. And what that says to me is that for some reason or other, it is not your diaphragm that is getting the breath, but you're really breathing with your chest and with your shoulders, and that's causing a lot of stress on your body. So focus on, that's why I'm putting the hands on the sides there, why I'm put, we're putting our hands, is so that you get an additional feedback, you're getting additional input, so you can truly see, right, not just feel, but really see visually where the breath is going. And if you don't see your hands going up and down with your diaphragm, then we can talk about doing various positions and exercises to get the breath really going through your rib cage in the front, through the sides, and through the back. Because when we're breathing in, that flow of air is going through the path of least resistance, right? If there is some sort of, I want to say the word obstruction, but I don't mean like a physical obstruction. I mean like, you know, inflammation or stress or something. For whatever reason, the air is not getting through the way that it should, it's going to go through a different way. So I actually have a great method that will help you get that breath through the back and the sides, all areas of the rib cage. I love it. It really gives a very nice stretch to the back and just gives you full relaxation. So if you have questions about that, if you want more information, just reach out, Motion Spot LLC, and we can talk about that. So what else with breathing, with this use of breath work for our pelvic floor? When you take part in heavy lifting, or even if it's not, you know, heavy, I'm not talking about like, you know, lifting 100 pounds, but if you're lifting something that creates this external pressure, right? And a lot of people will strain with lifting, or they'll hold their breath, and that's adding this extra pressure, abdominal pressure, to your pelvic floor, right? Just like when you sneeze, when you cough, the things we were talking about before. So you can use breathing to your advantage and utilize it with your exertion. So what I mean by that is when you are doing the heavy lifting, when you are, let's say it's on the floor, right, you're bending down, when you are going to stand back up, instead of holding your breath, use your exhale, use that breath blowing out air with your body standing up. So pair the heavy lift with the exhale, and then you're not putting as much pressure on your pelvic floor. Because think about it, when you hold your breath, right? Usually you hold your breath after taking a deep breath. And now we know when we inhale, our pelvic floor lengthens. So now we took this deep breath, and now we're holding this deep breath, our pelvic floor is full stretched out, right? That adds a lot of pressure. When you are then standing up while it's in pressure mode, and you're adding yet an additional pressure of the weight of, you know, that heavy thing. So now not only have you extended your pelvic floor kind of to full capacity, right? You already have it in that kind of a stress. Now you're also holding it there by holding your breath, and the stress then of standing, the stress of the heavy lifting, your abdominals, your muscles, your core are squeezing, are contracting, which puts even more pressure and stress on your pelvic floor, right? So that, if you have trouble with leaking, that's really the perfect recipe for a leak to happen. So instead of taking that deep breath and holding it with your exertion, instead use the exhale with your exertion to decrease all that added pressure on your pelvic floor. Now, explaining specific exercises for your pelvic health, for pelvic floor, might be a bit difficult on a radio show since there's no visual here. It's all auditory. So if you want specific exercises, you can check out my Instagram page, Motion Spot LLC, where you can reach out, send me a message there, and we can talk about different exercises depending on what your needs are. Specifically in this episode, we are talking about stress incontinence and muscular weakness in the pelvic floor. So if you think that might be something that you're struggling with, send me a message and we can create a plan just for you. But in addition to exercises and breathing, right? Breathing I consider one of the exercises, but a lot of people don't. So in addition to that, you know, what can you do? What can I discuss here on the show without needing a visual aid? Something that I am realizing that I haven't actually heard other practitioners specifically talk about this, but something I like to practice is balance. And what I mean by balance is like standing on one foot or standing up on your toes. Okay, so we know that the core is related to the pelvic floor. We know this because our pelvic floor muscles are part of our deep abdominal, right? Our deep core. And if you ever try balancing, or if you're ever kind of, you know, caught off balance, how do you get back onto balance? You contract your core muscles. If there ever is a moment where you are trying to, you know, reach the top shelf to grab something in the kitchen, you know, you're grabbing that fancy plate that's on the top shelf, you're going to stand up on your tippy toes, you're going to contract your core muscles to help stabilize you while you're in that full extension mode. Yeah, if there are any dancers out there, before a show, if you have a lot of pirouettes in your dance routine, a lot of dancers will do some quick crunches or a plank or something like that to get their core really fired up and strong and activating so that they can maintain their balance during those one-legged movements, during those single leg positionings. So something that I do is I stand on one leg. So I'll stand on the one foot with my other foot bent at the knee, and I'll switch, I'll do it on both, and then I'll also stand with my leg, one leg is on the ground straight, the other leg is out straight, right, kicked out straight, and that adds another component of difficulty to the balance, because now the center of gravity is thrown off a bit. Right, my center of gravity is not straight down anymore. I have this part of my body now that is in extension. So you need to utilize more balancing skills, more core. Also, if you are going up on your tippy toes, whether it's on one foot or on two, you need balance to maintain that position, which again will utilize core contraction, which will also put some contraction on your pelvic floor. And this is more for strengthening, right? So if you're not quite at strengthening stage, don't do this quite yet. You know, you can consult with your medical provider, or if you're already working with a pelvic health specialist, OT, a PT, you know, whoever it might be, I would speak with them prior to trying this. But this is just one more simple, I would say, exercise to activating your pelvic floor muscles and trying to strengthen. So some people might ask me then, like, okay, well, when am I supposed to do this, right? So something very simple. A lot of people say, I don't have time to exercise, right? So I just gave you three exercises, standing on one leg with the other one bent, standing on one leg with the other one straight, and then standing on tiptoes, let's just say on 2 feet, right? Tiptoes, 2 feet. So that's three exercises. It's really not a lot. And yet, people aren't going to know, like, when am I supposed to fit this into my day? I'm working, I'm cooking, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. I get it. I hear you. I'm definitely not saying, you know, stop what you're doing right now to exercise, to do these three exercises. But what you can do instead, think about, or maybe even write it down, get a planner, like a daily schedule, and write it out. Look at your routine. Look at your schedule. Look at your day. Are there any pockets of time where you are, you know, doing something, but you're actually not? Right? Here's what I mean. When you are making your morning coffee or tea, What do? You push the button to boil your water or to, what is it called when you're making the coffee, you're making the beans? I can't remember what that's called right now. You push it on the coffee machine, right? That's creating, well, I really can't think of the word for making your coffee, whatever, it's fine. During that time, what are you doing? Instead of standing around, waiting, scrolling, instead of doing something else, this is the time that you can do these three balancing exercises that I just mentioned, right? While you are waiting for the water to boil, while you are waiting for your coffee to make itself. I really can't believe I can't think of the word. I'm so sorry. During that time, that kind of downtime, right? You are doing something, you're making your morning drink, but you're also like your body is not doing something the entire time. So during those couple of minutes, that's all you need. Do these three exercises. What I love doing is doing it while I'm brushing my teeth, right? Because when you're brushing your teeth, sometimes I like this even more than while you're doing your morning coffee thing. Because when you're doing your morning coffee thing, like, you know, you could in theory be doing something else while you wait for the coffee to boil. Maybe you run to the bathroom, maybe you do the dishes, maybe you're, you know, running to turn on the computer or to get dressed or whatever. Like, there are other things that you can fill those couple of minutes with. Like, sure, that's fine, okay? When you are brushing your teeth, I can almost guarantee you for those 2 minutes, especially if you have an electric toothbrush, you know it's 2 minutes. You're standing there. Maybe you're thinking, you're looking in the mirror, maybe your other hand is scrolling on your phone, right? But you're not running around doing other things, typically. You're standing there. So instead of just standing there, slouched, right hand on one hip, try balancing. Try this balancing act. Sometimes I'll do more exercises in those 2 minutes, like some squats, or maybe I'll use my other hand and do some overhead press just with my hand, right? The one that's not using my toothbrush, and then switch. Like sometimes I'll do a full exercise routine in those 2 minutes. But if you don't want to be moving around so much, if you are someone that needs to focus more while you're brushing your teeth, doing this balance exercise routine is a perfect thing to incorporate into your teeth brushing. So simple, right? It can really be that simple. Instead of thinking, okay, I need to find 30 minutes to exercise, you know, I need to find these 30 minutes to work on my pelvic floor, start by 2 minutes while you brush your teeth, 2 minutes while your water is boiling. Okay, it can really be that simple to make these small adjustments and insert these more basic exercises into your day. Maybe, oh, here's an idea. While you're brushing your teeth, right, and you do this twice a day, do your balancing exercises, again, as long as your physician has approved, do your balance exercises. That's 2 minutes that's for 2 minutes twice a day. You don't even have to do it the entire 2 minutes. And then do your breath work, the diaphragmatic breathing, while you wait for your coffee to be finished. Brew, that's what it is. While your coffee is brewing. Okay, sorry. That is when you can do your diaphragmatic breathing. If you're standing around waiting, you can do it. If you're doing the dishes, you can practice your diaphragmatic breath. If you are turning your computer on, right? So that diaphragmatic breathing, since you can do it sitting, standing, you can do it while your hands are occupied or while your feet are occupied. Okay, you don't need anything extra, is what I'm trying to say. You can really insert this breath work into your day at any point. All right, so I hope that was all helpful information. If you have questions about any of the things we've talked about so far, or anything that we're going to continue talking about, but especially if you have questions about this pelvic floor information, please don't hesitate. Send me a message on Instagram at MotionSpotLLC, or you can email me to drjackie@motionspotllc.com. That is drjackie@motionspot.com. com. Now, to wrap up today's episode, we're going to shift gears. Just something that popped into my head. Let's check in with yourself. I'll check in with myself. Where are we in our New Year's resolutions? How are we doing there? Have you maintained it? Have you changed it? Have you forgotten completely that there is such a thing as a New Year's resolution? We're now at the end of February, so we are entering the end of quarter one of the year. And it kind of just popped into my head yesterday. Where am I in my resolutions? So my main resolution was to cook more for my family. I specifically wanted to start with soups because I figured they were pretty hearty. Typically, they have a pretty wide range of options. You can really make it whatever you want. A lot of nutrition involved, a lot of different like contents of nutrition, and relatively simple and quick to make. Can also make last a long time. So that's what I was starting with, and I'll be honest, I have not been so consistent, so I have been cooking more. So in my mind, right, to me, I am making progress towards this goal of cooking for my family, right? Because my loose goal was to cook more. My specific goal, I think I'll have to actually go back into my notes or re-listen to the episode, but pretty sure my specific goal was to cook at least once a week, and I have not been so consistent with that. Even sometimes when I do technically cook the dinner, it's not like a full meal that I planned out and prepared and cooked. Like, that's really what I wanted to do more than, you know, throwing something in the microwave or the toaster or the oven. Like, I wanted to actually create a meal. But overall, I have been cooking more. I've been making a lot of, not soup, but I have been making stuffed peppers, like once every 2 weeks, maybe twice every 2 weeks. And tonight I'm making a baked ziti, so it's not soup, but it's still like super easy and will be filling and can last a couple of days. So that is this goal, right? But I've also changed, or added, I guess I should say, I added a couple of goals for the year, and I'm making progress towards those. So one goal I have now is to just overall, I know I always say you should have a specific goal, so this is not specific at all, to have a more productive day, right? It's really not specific. But the specificity comes like this. I want to change my schedule so that I'm waking up earlier and that I'm going to bed earlier. And when I wake up earlier, that'll give me some time, hopefully, in the morning to get things done. And then, hopefully, right, this is all hopeful, after waking up earlier, I plan to then leave the house for drop-off earlier and get home a bit sooner and start the day from there just a little bit earlier. And I think it'll really make all the difference. And I am realizing this, like, I've kind of been thinking about it for a little while now. As you all know, my baby does not sleep for whatever reason. I just make kids who are horrible at sleeping, but I am just like so tired in the morning. And part of it is my baby sleeps now from like whenever it is she goes to bed until between like 4 and 5 a.m. is her usual. And when I feed her then, I won't feed her before like 4:30 a.m. and I really try to get it pushed until 5. But if I feed her and then she goes back to sleep, which is what tends to happen, and I then go back to sleep, she's going to wake up within 1 to 2 hours. And whenever I go back to sleep, I'm always like, maybe tonight, like, or I guess this morning, maybe this will be the time that she gives me an extra 2 hours. Like, that's all I need. I'll get 2 hours and then I'll be good, right? But more often than not, she only gives me 1 hour or any period of time that's less than 2 hours. And then when I wake up, I'm even more exhausted. I'm sluggish. I'm like not wanting to get up. And then the day just starts out not great. Then we leave for drop off late. Then we come home and I still have, you know, my coffee hasn't been finished. It's now cold. I still have all the work to do that I had originally. And now I'm alone with the baby and it's a very stressful day. And then I spend my day splitting my time between the baby and my work, but not splitting it where it's like a couple hours here I'm with the baby, a couple hours here there I'm working. It's splitting it simultaneously. So I'm trying to work and be with the baby at the exact same time, and it's A, impossible because she doesn't nap, but B, very stressful, and I notice that I get frustrated with her. And it's not her fault, right? So I started to map out my day with my business coach. So that's the other thing I did. I invested in myself and I hired a business coach who I'll be working with for the next few months, which I'm very, very excited about, just to help me map things out. And so that's one thing that I did, what my day currently was looking like and what I want my day to look like. So what then was happening was that in the evening, my husband would go pick up my son, bring my daughter with him, and that gave me 40 minutes to get work done, but 40 minutes was never enough time to get work done, okay? Then he would come home, we'd have an hour of family time, then do bedtime routine, and then after bedtime, which could be anywhere between 7:30 and 8:30, depending how my baby's doing, then I have to clean up, you know, my husband and I have to clean up, I also have work to do, I also want to work out, we also want to spend time together, and there is not enough time to do all that before it's suddenly 10:30 or 11 p.m. So by moving everything in the morning, just that hour, 2 hours, right, by moving it, I'm starting the day more productive. I'm hoping then I will be less frustrated during the day, especially being less frustrated with my baby, right, having more patience there. And then if I've gotten work done in the morning, I won't feel like I have as much work to do in the evening. If she ever does nap, maybe I can get some work done then. And then during that 40 minutes when my husband is out getting my son, then maybe I'll only work for a couple of minutes if I have just a couple of small tasks. And then I can start the cleaning up process so that after bedtime, we can, you know, do just one thing. Either I can finish cleaning up or I can get some work done and then still, or we can hang out and I can get to bed earlier because I know I'll wake up the next morning and I know I'm going to have at least an hour to start getting work done. So I did that this morning for the first time and it actually went really well. I was kind of nervous that I was going to be like delirious by the afternoon because with my son I started doing this too, but with my son I actually was doing it at 4 a.m. and that was completely not sustainable. With my daughter, I'm doing it at 5 a.m. and I was hoping she would sleep a little bit longer this morning for the first wake up. Of course, she ended up sleeping less, like she woke up earlier than usual, but whatever, it's fine. So by like 5:15, I was done feeding her, I put her down, and then I started my day, brushed my teeth, got dressed, got downstairs, and started my coffee, and got a head start on dinner, right, which was the baked ziti that I made. That I just mentioned. So I started boiling the water, and while my coffee was brewing and the pasta water was boiling, I did some body movements. I did some body weight squats, a couple of good mornings, and my balancing exercises that I was telling you all about, right? Also why that was all in my head, because I did it all this morning and it was great. Like I felt so productive. And then after I did that movement for a little bit, I didn't do it the entire time the water was boiling or the coffee was brewing. I just did it for like a minute or two, right? Got a couple of nice sets in there. I turned on my computer, started doing some work, got my coffee. I was drinking coffee while it was still hot. It was truly unbelievable. Started getting some work done. Then the kids woke up. They woke up still earlier than I wanted them to. Like I had maybe like an hour and a half of time to get work done before my son woke up, and then within like 10 minutes my daughter woke up, but it was early, which is not, you know, always so fun, but my husband was still home, so he was able to help me get them changed for the morning, which was good. So since then I have not entered delirium. I've still been like a relatively productive person, and I have had more patience with my daughter because again I started the day very productively. And now I know, okay, like, it's okay if I don't finish something today. I'm gonna have that hour and a half tomorrow morning. I don't have to get it all done right now. Whereas before, I was like, oh my god, I'm not getting anything done. And that was very stressful. So that's something that I'm working on, is adjusting my day so that I'm going to bed earlier, I'm waking up earlier, and I'm having more productivity in the morning and less frustration throughout the day. So now I want you to check in with yourself. Where are you in your New Year's resolution? Has it adjusted at all? Has hearing my New Year's resolution changed your minds at all about what you might be doing or your productivity levels? Let me know. I'm definitely curious. Or you don't have to let me know, but at least check in with yourself. Remind yourself, what was your resolution? Have I made progress? Should I get back to it or change it up or, you know, make some adjustments? All right, speaking of sleep, my baby is really a horrible napper, so I hear her crying now. So I'm gonna have to wrap this up. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Midweek Mom Talk on 360 Talk Radio for Women. I'm Dr. Jackie. Bye-bye for now.